Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Shaya Ostov. He's had over 30 years of experience in making shidduchim. He has an unusual method. He's not your run-of-the-mill shadchan. He has created what is known as the Menucha Principle, and he coaches in shidduchim, in dating, in engagement, in life in general.
And a marriage.
The relationship. What?
And in marriage as well.
And in marriage as well. Absolutely.
Right.
He's the author of quite a few books, three books. The Seven Gates, the Menucha Principle in Marriage, and the Menucha Principle in Shidduchim, Dating, and Engagement. Good evening, Shaya.
Good evening, Chaim.
Tell me, you've been doing this for a long time. How did you get into it? What qualified you to do this?
Well, actually, I'm a professional. I've been treating couples for many, many years. Started actually back in the 70s at the trained under some very qualified marital and family therapists, and moved into the area of singles about 15 years ago when I realized the extent of the crisis and that there were just thousands and thousands of Jewish singles who were feeling very frustrated as watching their lives pass by and not getting any closer to marriage. So I decided to focus my skills not only on marriage, but on working with couples who are dating and couples who are engaged as well. You know, today engagement is no guarantee of marriage either anymore.
Absolutely.
So I've kind of focused my attention on both marriage and dating and engagement. And Baruch Hashem, it's been quite successful.
How did you develop the Menucha Principle? And what is the Menucha Principle?
Oh, very good. Okay, so I didn't develop the Menucha Principle. It's been around for since Hashem created the world. We say, Bo Shabbos, Bo Menucha. Shabbos comes and we experience Menucha. But the reason why I moved in this direction is because a number of years ago I realized that most of the work done with married couples and couples who are dating is not very successful. It's not its effectiveness has been in question for some time. Many of your listeners will attest by themselves. So I began to explore many different areas. I found that there was one particular area that was of interest to me. But I also realized a lot of it was based on some Eastern religions. So looking further into Chazal, I was interested to see whether there was any counterpart that Chazal had taught over the years. And I found through my studies of a mashgiach in Eretz Yisrael, of the Ponevizhi Yeshiva, a mashgiach by the name of Rav Chaim Freelander, Sifsei Chaim, that he had been teaching concepts of Menuchas and Nefesh back in the 50s and 60s. But it wasn't his teaching. This has been going on for thousands of years. And Menuchas and Nefesh essentially is a state of mind where one feels a sense of deep security, a sense of integration, a sense of self-esteem and of wholeness. And I began to learn and understand that what Chazal had been teaching us all these thousands of years had enormous application for couples and for developing relationships and for sustaining and maintaining and cultivating relationships of deep love and affection. And studying Rav Chaim Freelander's works on Menuchas HaNefesh and others, the Altar of Kelm and others, I began to understand how this could be applied, and I began to apply it in my work with couples. So essentially now what's happened is that this is all the work I do, this is all I teach, this is really effectively all I believe in, because I see it's an enormous application and life-changing possibilities for helping couples get engaged, stay engaged, get married, and stay married.
How many years ago did you start working on the Menucha principle?
I probably started about 6 years ago was where the real work began. And it took about 4 years of working it through with couples that were coming to see me, and until I had the first book, which was on marriage, the Menucha principle in marriage. And then a year after that, which was about 8-9 months ago, I came out with the second volume on the Menucha principle in Shidduchim, dating engagement. And actually, there's an e-book as well that's sold on Amazon, which is not Menucha principle, it's called the Tranquility principle, which is essentially the same book, but I've just kind of secularized a little bit to make it more
more universal.
Yeah, who will be more comfortable with the more secular terms. And these books are available in Jewish bookstores, available. I have two websites that the book can be acquired. The Menucha Principle.
And the websites are?
TheMenuchaPrinciple.com is one website. And the other website is called Gateways to Marriage. The Menucha Principle is the more recent site, and that's where I kind of explain a lot of these concepts and provide a forum for people to discuss them with me and others.
Can you tell us a little bit about the books?
The books are essentially, they're broken up into different chapters because, you see, Menuchas HaNefesh is a way of experiencing yourself in life. There are two. What I try to do in the book is to understand that this is not a clinical model. While we deal with things of like anxiety and what people call commitment phobia and fears and distractions, those are clinical models. This is not a clinical model. You see, everyone who walks the face of this earth struggles between two states of mind. Chazal calls one state of mind, Menuchas HaNefesh, was a sense of well-being and integration, where we develop relationships and hold on to relationships and build lives of shared love and affection. That's Menuchas HaNefesh. And the other state of mind is what Chazal calls Pizur HaNefesh. Pizur means, a Hebrew word is called Mufuzar, means to be distracted. And everyone struggles between these two states of mind. It's part of who we are. That's part of life's challenge. No one in the face of this earth is without this challenge. What the book does is that it takes many examples where people are alternating between these two states of mind, and essentially it teaches a person how to move from one state of mind to the next. That no one is ever trapped in a state of anxiety, or no one is ever trapped in a state of fear or commitment phobia or anything like that, because Hashem gives us all bechira. He gives us free will. And what the book does is it lays out the way we think and the way we feel and the way our bodies react and the way we behave, and it teaches how to move from one state of mind to the next. So frequently I'll get people who are, I have an office here in Far Rockaway, get a lot of people who are engaged, who are suffering from feelings of deep anxiety, and And what the book does is it teaches them how to quiet the anxiety, how to stay in the relationship, how to put things in perspective, how not to read life from their visceral reactions or their fears. It gives them a sense of control over their lives and their destiny, rather than being imprisoned by it. I had one girl who came in who was engaged, and she said, "You know, I'm engaged to this fellow who's a very nice fellow, but I get very nervous when I'm with him. And I'm thinking of breaking it because when I'm with him, I actually feel a queasiness in my stomach. I even feel a bit of nausea." This, she said, "This is certainly a reason for me not to consider not going ahead with this." So I
can hear that.
So I explained to her, conceptually, I explained to her, "Listen, your stomach is not the chairman, the CEO of your life. You know, it doesn't really have voting rights. We got to learn to quiet this stomach. If there are things that are bothering you about him, there are qualities that you really can't take, then we understand. But if it's just a question of a visceral reaction, well, we have to help you quiet that down." And that's an example of going, and which we did, and Baruch Hashem, this young lady is now married. But these are the kinds of things that we deal with every day. People feel, they're in a relationship. One day you're in a relationship, and you think that this person is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. You say, "Wow, where was this person all my life?" The next day you meet this person, and all of a sudden you begin to notice different things. I had one guy who called me. I'll give you an example. He called me outside her house. He was about to get engaged. So he said to me, "Shai, I have the ring in my hand, and I'm outside the house, but I don't know if I can go in to give her the ring." I said, "Well, why?" He said, because this birthmark, she had a birthmark that I noticed when we first started going out, and I was able to deal with it. All of a sudden, this birthmark became bigger. You know, it goes is at one moment is as small as a micron, the next minute it's as big as a basketball in his mind. So once again, teaching him how to teaching him to remember what I, reminding him what I taught him about Peter and Nefesh and Menuchos Nefesh, and how to quiet himself down, how to put things in perspective, how to get back to the moments that they shared. And he kind of came back to himself. Now, Baruch Hashem, they're a married couple, they have a family. There are many, many of these incidents, countless incidents like this that we deal with every day. Because in relationship building, we're always, our perceptions are always changing, but we don't know whether they're changing because they're changing because of the person we're dating or married to, or they're changing because things are happening in our lives. Our jobs, our family, our health, our finances, the time of the month, or the, or pressures at work. We don't know. But the reality is what?
One of the most common problems between couples between couples who have been married for a while is the financial problem. How do you teach them to deal with it? How do they achieve menuchas anefesh, even though the finances may not necessarily have solved themselves?
Well, listen, I don't think any couple today is in deeper financial crisis than couples who lived in past generations. My parents, all the shalom, my grandparents, I'm sure yours, anybody else's. It's a question of the number of factors here. Number one, what's the value in our lives? You know, how do we value our relationships? How do we value our ability to feel close? I think there's a big difference between no food on the table and other expenditures that are, we have to make choices. But what I teach people is that in Menuchos HaNefesh, they're focused on a balance and tranquil sense of self, right? That's what we're focused on. How to stay with the bottom line of the person that you're going to be spending the rest of your life with in a close and loving relationship, and how that becomes the most important entity of your life. And you can make decisions based on that. Two couples can deal with a lot of hardship, not just financial issues. Couples can deal with a lot of hardship if they're focused together and they're working together and they feel committed to the relationship and they enable. I want to give you a mashal. I want to give you a a kind of a metaphor that I like to use. You know, when I was a kid, I used to live in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and we used to go to the circus. And as a little kid in the circus, I was always fascinated when I looked up at the high wire, because I saw two things which I really didn't understand, but which were remarkable. One is that two people were able to stand on a high wire motionless, maybe holding their balance poles, and not moving, and then the drums would roll, and then they start walking towards each other, and I was amazed at, firstly, how could they be motionless on the high wire, and then secondly, how could they walk towards each other. Later in life, I realized that was just an illusion. That really wasn't what was happening. I didn't really understand it. And I understood from the perspective of marriage and relationship building. No one is on the high wire without moving. We're always moving. We're always balancing ourselves on the high wire. We don't, as a kid, doesn't see that there are millions of micro movements that keep us on that wire, you know, emotionally and physically, and the high wire of life. And once we get balanced, then the next thing is that two people on the high wire, as they're walking towards each other, are always balancing each other. You use your own balance to balance the other person. You know, you kind of say, you know, bend your knees a little bit to straighten out your pole. You know, so money, we take money or anything else in life. The goal of marriage, the goal of any relationship, is number one, to develop your own sense of inner balance, and then to keep your partner balanced. There is no financial. There's no financial crisis that should perturb or disturb a couple's financial emotional balance, and unless they're not balanced within themselves, because their values are not clear and their hierarchy of priorities are not clear.
So what you're saying is that if they do have, if the relationship develops a problem merely because of the financial aspect, it means that it's really something else that is only coming to the surface through the financial aspect. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. That their own sense of menuchas hanefesh, their own deeper sense of self, their own inner balance are all shaky. And many things, whether it's finance or whether it's physical, or whether it's you know, family members or jobs or anything, can disturb the delicate nature of their relationship and throw it off course. Particularly today, when we have so many things in our society that are undermining relationships that tear us apart. So I don't think that any couple today goes through anything near what couples in the past went through. It's just that we have different expectations. You know, we have different expenditures.
Right. Right. And people were far more spiritual. They were not as much into materialistic things as we are today.
That's right. So helping a couple realize, I had a couple came to see me a couple of years ago. He was an accountant, and the couple, that there was a new marriage of about 3 or 4 months old, and it was in real crisis because they really couldn't balance the books from his perspective, and they were watching every penny, and they were, you know, it took a while before he understood that. That you can be an accountant in the office, but you can't be an accountant at home,
right?
At home, that doesn't, being an accountant doesn't lend to shalom bias, doesn't lend to closeness,
right?
So you know, there are many things that when this is at the center of self, this relationship, then really you can go overcome any of life's difficulties. There's no limit.
Now, I am sure that, throughout the years, throughout your experience, you must have had some funny anecdotes, funny things that happened. care to share one or two of them?
Well, I mean, in the world of, you know, I'll it's hard to say that things are funny when it comes to the people's lives, but I'll share a few interesting ones with you.
Okay.
I'll share some, I don't know if they would call this funny, this is very interesting, though. I was once at a, I once went away for a Shabbat, I was invited to for in a community, and we stayed at a home. My wife and I stayed at a home, and they were hosting us, a young, wasn't a young couple, a couple about 41, 42 years old. I think he was about 42, and she was maybe at 37, 38. So as I was walking to shul on Friday night, I was talking to our host, and I had seen that the house was fairly new. They had no children, and he was about 40, as they say, in his early 40s. So we were talking about what I do and what I'm presenting, and he said, oh, yeah, he had been single for a long time. So I said, so how long were you, you know? He said, well, I just got married last year. I said, he said, I've been going out for about almost 20 years. 20
wow.
years. 20 years. So I said, so how many girls did you date? So he gave me this astronomical figure. I didn't want to tell you what the number was, but I would tell you it's more than halfway to 1,000.
Ouch.
An enormous number of girls. So I said, to him, I said, so how did it happen that after you dated so many girls? Because he was a very brilliant fellow. He was a lawyer. He was an engineer. People were after him. They were, you know, they saw him as someone they wanted to
as a catch.
So. So everybody was throwing people at him, or girls at him, you know, like a tennis coach is throwing balls at someone who's practicing a swing, right?
Right.
And he said, well, the problem was that by the time he graduated and graduated engineering in law school, you know, he was getting every day he was getting new suggestions, and the problem was that he had a long list of the people told him this, what he needed, what he deserved, this, what he should be after, you know, beauty and brains and ruchnius and, you know, spiritual, the whole business, all along the yards. So he had this list that he always took. He didn't have to look at it. It was always in front of him. And every girl he went out with, nobody...
nobody had everything.
I mean, it's a very horrible commentary of what goes on in our society. But he was a very sweet fellow. He wasn't, you know... but it really is a horrible commentary on how people suffer today, particularly the young women.
Right.
So he said after almost 20 years of dating, he had this a friend of his who was maybe a Talmud Chacham, I think. So he said to him, what do I do? How do I get past this? How do I? So his friend said to him, or his Rebbe, I don't know exactly who it was, said, listen, you need Hashem has to help you in this. He says, you have to do a major chesed. Maybe if you do a major chesed, maybe Hashem will do a major chesed for you. Right? A major chesed. So he said, I decided that I knew of a woman who was, I believe she was an almana, she was a widow. She had 9 kids. And he had some money because he was working for a major law firm as a big
right.
time, you know, as a pastor. He said he bought her a house. He bought her a lock, stock, and barrel without a mortgage.
Wow.
He said, and then the nest happened. He said, well, I said, what was the nest? He said, the next girl that I married, I didn't have the list in front of me anymore. It disappeared. So he married her. And they were... Last I heard, they were doing very well. They even have a family. They have kids. You know, it doesn't speak very much about my work, but it just shows, you know, it's a, you know, there was, you know, there were many, many, I had one couple of give you an example, you know, how things can change in the dime. I was dealing with one couple of married, couple had just gotten married, and they were fighting, right, in the, before they came to see me, but they were really having a very hard time, and they just didn't know what to do with each other. and every work and money and tennis, where to go, which shows to watch, and they were just having such a crisis. So I started working with them a little bit, and then one day they came in and they said, it just kind of went away. I said, well, what happened? He said, well, we were fighting, and one day, and then, let's say his name was Yosef. He said, Yosef went into the bathroom, and we got angry. He slammed the door. He slammed the door, and then I realized I was wrong. I said, Yosef, you can come out of the bathroom. So Yosef tried to open the door, and he couldn't. The door was locked. He locked himself in, and I didn't know how to get him out. And they both started laughing, and suddenly the whole thing just transformed. They were hysterical laughing, and by the time they get, they realize how silly it all was. Once we wrote a lot, and the work that I do with both dating couples and married couples, you realize that the transformation that goes from the crisis to closeness is on a dime, that the potential for each of us, that Hashem puts the potential on each of us to be close and to be loving people. We think that we're trapped into our feelings of anger, but the reality is the ability to return to our real selves and to be caring and loving people and to build that relationship never goes away. That's really at the heart of what I teach, and that the maftech, the key to be able to touch that part of us, to get in there and to discover, like this guy who with a birthmark, to be able to put that birthmark back into its right place and size, to return to who he is and this relationship that he has with this girl.
Isn't that also masking a fear of marriage, masking a fear of sharing one's life with another individual?
Yeah, we can call it many things, but I think we do it all the time in our lives. We do it because we're afraid of emotional closeness. We do it because we're distracted. We do it because we can't handle our peas or our nefesh. We do it because we can't handle our emotions or our thoughts. Now, I'll give you an example, right? Let's say a person is davening, right? A person is praying to Hashem, right? So you're trying to daven, and all of a sudden your head is filled with a million different thoughts. Where do they come from? I'm trying to talk to Hashem, and how come my head is filled with a million different thoughts?
Right.
Now, we can say that maybe you're frightened of talking to Hashem, but that's not necessarily the case. It means that there are processes going on within you that you haven't learned to contain and control and quiet down. We're wired to do I'll give you an example. I saw a piece of research that says that within that when a person makes a decision, there are approximately 70 different possibilities that his mind sifts through before he makes that decision or she makes that decision. Now, we can't be aware of them, otherwise we'd be paralyzed. But they're all there nevertheless. They're there, and we're making these decisions within decisions all the time. So what happens is that our minds are filled with a million and one different thoughts when we're trying to pray to Hashem. Or in the same way, our minds are distracted when we're trying to build a relationship and we're worried about, somebody's calling us on our iPhone or BlackBerry or a business deal or the office or someone I went out with last week or last month It's not necessarily what we call commitment phobia. Whether that exists or not, I don't know. But we call it that. But it's that we can't contain, we don't know how to quiet down the traffic in our heads so that we have a sense of control over where our minds and feelings and even bodies are going.
There is an old parable about this one guy who is shown an office in heaven, which is bustling with lots of activity, angels going back and forth, phones ringing, the fax machine working. And then he's shown another office where there is just One angel looks quite contented. He looks at the facts every once in a while. He smiles, signs, and it's done. And he asks the angel that's, you know, directing him, why did you show me this? What is this? And she says, the first office deals with you. All your thoughts, all your contrasting thoughts, all the times that you decide one thing and you immediately afterwards decide the exact opposite. The other one, where there is only one angel that seems very contented with his job, that one shows another person who makes up their mind immediately and has nothing else but that particular goal in mind.
That's right.
I think this could also apply to marriage, to relationships with another person, which in itself can quite often be very scary, the simple thought of having to share one's life with another.
Well, it's not scary if it's based on a relationship that enables two people to feel to feel that they are balanced and balancing each other, that their own deeper humanness can come out and be shared and be experienced, and one can cultivate a life, a family, warm feelings. I don't, in this society where you're told that if you're going to marry one person, you're giving up all the thousands that you didn't marry.
That'd be scary.
Well, that's scary, but it's not a real fear, because in that fear you're losing out on life's most precious experience, the experience of human love, emotional love that's cultivated over decades. So that's the real fear. The real fear is that you're missing out on the real thing.
Also, the story that you told about the guy with the list and all the 20 years that he could find nobody because she didn't meet all the attributes in the list.
Right.
It reminded me of a story of the Stipler. A Bocher in his 40s came to the Stipler and asked, when am I going to meet my Bashert?
Yep.
And the Stipler answered him, you already did. You just let her go.
Just let her go. I mean, I tell people, you can be in Grand Central Station trying to meet somebody, and you can be stepping on each other's toes, but if you don't know what she looks like, or you don't know, you're not gonna recognize each other. But a Menuchas HaNefesh is that you do recognize because you're looking at life from a very quieter and gentler place within yourself. And you're able to see human attributes within yourself and within the other person, and you're not distracted by birthmarks, or you're not distracted by financial issues, or you're not distracted by who that person walking in the door right now is while you're on a date with somebody else. Your ability, Menuchas HaNefesh, is the ability to quiet distractions. That you're not imprisoned by your addiction to being distracted. That's what we're talking about.
Well, Shaya, we're just about out of time. I will say, though, that the subject is fascinating. You happen to be a very fascinating interviewee, and I'd love to do this again where we can continue the conversation.
Yes, Hashem, and anyone interested. So once again, this the Menucha Principles, menuchaprinciple.com, or Great Ways to Marriage, or the Amazon carries the kind of secularized version called the Tranquility Principle in Dating and Engagement. I thank you very much, Chaim, for a wonderful half hour. It's been
tell us how people can get in touch with you if they want your professional services.
You can reach through the websites or through my Gmail account, slostrov, OSTROV at Gmail.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
This has been, like I said, absolutely fascinating, very informative.
I wish you an oil.
Thank you very much.
Siva v'chasim etova. Good kibenshiyo.
Siva v'chasim etova, and good night, one and all.
Good night.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.